time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson with
Eric Billingsley.
That's right. Finally, we got some of the old gang back. Well, one of the old gang back. It's been a long summer, basically. Eric, what have you been doing?
It's like trying to get the family and the extended family and the stepbrothers and sisters and get together for the one holiday. That's what trying to get all of us together for one podcast.
Right. Exactly.
Doing show. I did a summer show that, ended just a few weeks ago and, recovering from my auto accident, which, still a lot of pain, not excruciating, but it's just, kind of annoying that it's been several months now and it still hurts.
Right.
But I've been getting away gradually. I think I cut cold turkey at one point on most of my television shows, and
but
I have been watching Twin Peaks and Game of Thrones religiously. I just can't cut those out.
Yeah, whenever I heard you saying you were cutting the cable and all this other good stuff, I was like, wait a minute, how is he going to function? Then I realized you got like a bazillion movies ready to watch, so I don't think you're going to be lonely without something to watch.
No. If you counted all of my Blu-rays and all of my DVDs, if I sat down now and did nothing, didn't sleep, didn't eat, didn't drink, didn't do anything but watch movie after movie, I still couldn't finish them in my lifetime.
But you have them.
I have them. The idea is to have every movie that I would ever want to watch at my fingertips. But the problem is, when you get a collection as large as mine, there's no such thing as having anything at your fingertips. It's like, okay, looking it up on my electronic catalog, okay, which CD case out of like 20 is it in, and now I've got to figure out which page in that in the CD wallet that it's in. And it kind of takes the spontaneity.
Yeah.
Where you have to spend like 15, 20 minutes hunting for the movie that you want to watch.
Yeah, so you're like sitting there and go, oh, I want to watch Killer Clowns. Okay, where is that?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's seriously what I have to do. I've got to just shout out to DVD Profiler. If you have a large collection of movies like I do, it is a lifesaver. I've been using that thing for years, but that's where my collection is, and it's, I think, over 5,000 discs.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty large. Yeah, I have to look it up in there, and I've got, because I can't keep it alphabetically. It's like, what am I going to do? Re-alphabetize every time I get a new movie on disc?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, let's rearrange the shelves again. So, all right.
Yeah, so the only way it is to number it and look it up. Yeah.
Well, it's been an interesting season for summer movies. Did you catch any of the movies over the summer?
Yeah, early on. What was the last Marvel film? I mean, I saw Guardians 2.
Uh-huh.
And there was another one after that, wasn't there?
Ask me to remember it. That's a good question.
I'm forgetting too. I'm sure I saw it though.
There's Wonder Woman.
Doctor Strange. We talked about that on our podcast.
Yeah, that's before.
But I did see. I grew up being a very avid Stephen King fan. I mean, I think I was reading King when I was probably. I'm not exaggerating. I think I was probably 11 or 12 when I first started reading Stephen King novels.
Yeah, probably about the same here.
Most,
yeah.
Yeah, most people are just like they look aghast when they hear that. And I was like, I was a pretty, level-headed 12-year-old. I knew what the difference between fantasy and reality, and and I could handle it. I wouldn't necessarily advise Stephen King for any 12-year-old, but there are those who, like myself, that I just couldn't get enough of horror. I start off watching the old Universal horror movies and went on from there.
Yeah,
but anyway,
hold on.
Basically.
Well, what was your first Stephen King book? What was the first one you read? Can you recall that?
Oh, let me think. You know what? I think it was The Stand.
There's a big jump into the Stephen King.
Yeah, but I read so many of them, and it might not have been. Honestly, I can't remember that far back. I just know that I started reading them. I'm trying to think even what movie. I'm sure that I must have seen a movie that was based on one of his books that got me to start reading them, but I can't even remember what that is now.
Well, my very first one I can recall it was Christine, and
I did read that early on, yes.
And then when I turned 16 years old and actually could drive a car, My dad and I both went out looking for a Plymouth Fury.
Awesome.
The closest we found was a 63 Plymouth Fury, and the guy just wanted way too much money. But yeah, we wanted it. It was a 58? Yeah, 58 Plymouth Fury. We wanted one so bad. Never could find it.
And you know what? That's a Stephen King movie that I haven't seen forever.
Ah.
I need to rewatch that one, because, I mean, I've seen most of his movies. Like, I watched Firestarter. Mm-hmm. I've probably seen that a couple of times in the last 5 or 7 years. That's one of my favorites. But Christine, I haven't watched in a long, long time.
So when did you get into the, well, what we're going to lead into is talking about the Dark Tower movie, but when did you get into the Dark Tower series?
Oh, well, as soon as, I mean, I read every Stephen King book I could get my hands up on and get my hands on,
mm-hmm.
Up until I read it. And I had a kind of falling out with Stephen King on this book. And this is where I differ with a lot of King fans, because a lot of people dearly love it.
Oh.
It's huge. I mean, he made all of his books are huge, but this one next to the Stand, other than The Stand, maybe his biggest book as far as pages. It's just absolutely enormous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love that about Stephen King, that he takes his time to develop these characters, and that way you really care about what happens to them when they all get, you know, die in really nasty, horrible ways.
Right.
But it just, you get all this kind of slow build up for three quarters of the book. And then there's, should we be talking spoilers, or is that,
sure.
is that okay?
Oh, yeah,
or,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's been out for years. I know
yeah,
the movie's
exactly.
just coming out, but anyway, you know, there's this scene in the book that is not in the TV series, obviously, and I hope to God it's not in the movie. And it's what really was my breaking point with Stephen King for a while. There's a scene where all these kids, they're all like 12, 13 years old, and in order to combat the clown, you know where I'm going with this.
Yep.
They have themselves a little gangbang. kiddie gangbang. I'm like, really? These are the forces of good, and this is how you're solving this issue?
Yeah.
It was horrendous to me, and it's still, even thinking about it now, is horrendous. And I don't know what Stephen King was thinking when he was writing this.
Yeah.
But
it was a very disturbing moment in that book. And I'm agreeing with you. It's like, I'm glad they left it out of the original series. Let's see what they do with the new movie coming out.
Oh, please don't do it in the movie. Please. That's all we need, you know.
Because it's actually kind of a cheap way to get out of it, too. You know, it really didn't solve anything. It's just created a bond. I don't know. Like, yeah.
That, I see what he was going for, but he missed the mark by
right.
a mile. And
right.
he just went into an area that I don't think he ever expected. He should have. I mean, he should have known better. He was a very, very, you know, he's written some, but he was a very experienced writer at the time.
Yeah.
He should have known what he was doing. But that really just kind of, you know, broke it for me with Stephen King. And then the last quarter of the book just felt rushed. It felt like he was like, oh my God, I've got a deadline. I've got to finish this thing now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've got three quarters of the book that's very slow and meandering, which I said, I love. That's part of who Stephen King is.
Yeah.
And then the last part of it just felt so rushed and so, you know, off, you know, just off the cuff, that it just didn't really satisfy, you know, everything that had come before. I had a falling out, and I started reading a few select Stephen King books here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But when he came, when the first book in the Dark Tower series came out, The Gunslinger,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was there the first week, but I knew it was coming out, and I planned to read it. So I bought it as soon as I had the money for it.
Yep, same here.
And I vividly remember reading that book, even though I don't vividly remember all the details.
Right.
But it just was one of those books. I mean, some people have that experience with the Lord of the Rings. Some people with the Golden Compass, or the Harry Potters. You know, this was mine. This was my coming age story, and I just hooked onto it, and it just, I could not wait from one book to the other. It just seemed an eternity. And now, you know, that they're all through, and it's just like, it's an amazing body of work.
Right. Yeah, definitely is. And it's a really cool story. I love the way he weaves in even his other regular non Dark Tower books into the lore.
Yes.
And the lore of the non Dark Tower books in, they've got some Dark Tower references, the Easter eggs, if you will. And I love that about those. And
I mean, even books that were written before he even conceived of doing the Dark Tower series, he managed to weave them into the mythos.
Right. It was It was crazy. Great. It's like he was all along planned on doing this, and now out popped and the great series and great. And I got to tell you though, whenever I was reading those, a couple of them, I'm like, oh, this would be cool in the movie. If they need to make a movie of this. And then after I got done with the series, I'm like, no movies. They'd just ruin it. Well, they came out with the movie, and I'll tell you what, I enjoyed the movie for what it was, but it wasn't much. It left you with more questions. I didn't even know where they were going. I didn't know what was going on. I loved the Easter eggs that they put in the movie. That kept me interested because I kept looking for more. And but other than that, I don't know where they were going. What do you think? You saw it. I've already reviewed it on the podcast. What did you say? What do you got to say about it?
I thought, and bear in mind, I know I've been, you know, I'm long in the tooth. I know that books don't adapt to movies.
Right.
If you've read the book, 99.9% that you're going to be disappointed with the movie, because there's just no way that the movie can, in 2 hours, can live up to what, you know, you may have spent a week to most of a month reading.
Yeah.
If it's just one of Stephen King's books, you very well may be spending most of a month reading.
True.
It was horrible to me. There were only a handful of references. There's the of course the gunman, the gunslinger's credo,
right?
With I do not kill with my hand, I kill with my heart. But I love that, and there's no way that they could avoid using that as a central part. But there's so much more language and world building. That's the thing,
right?
That Stephen King gets so right in those books is with the world building and the details. And like I said, it was no accident I compared it to Lord of the Rings, because that's exactly what makes that those books work as well, is
right.
The details that he builds into the world. And that's exactly, and I'm not going to say that Stephen King is quite the skilled writer that Tolkien was, but it's still a magnificent feat to do what he's done.
Yeah.
And
he created a different world, and we believed it, and we were ready to take more into it. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I love the characters. I mean, Jake and Eddie and Susanna. I mean, I can't even imagine the cast, being able to cast someone to play those roles. I mean, of course, I never envisioned anyone like even Idris Elba playing the role originally, but
yeah,
I didn't really have a problem once I heard that he was being cast.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen someone like, what's his name from No Country for Old Men? He was in the running to play the role for a while.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I know
Spanish
you're talking. Yeah,
that's going to drive me crazy. I can't remember his name.
I know
there were
a
number of actors though that were connected to the role that I was like, yeah, okay, I can see that. Mm-hmm. And of course, Stephen King has said many times, and it even references it directly in the book, that the character is reminiscent or looks like Clint Eastwood.
Right.
And that was part of the birth of the character. So, of course, you think of that's who I envisioned while I was reading every book.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even some of the covers, you look at the picture of Roland and he looks like Clint Eastwood. So.
Yeah. The most famous one is the one that the illustration where he's in the just outside the rose, the dark tower with the roses.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, love that picture. That's some awesome illustrations.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
but I mean, here's the thing. I hope that people do like it, because maybe the next one will be better. I hope that it has to be better.
Yeah,
it was so generic. I mean, it was just like a really half-assed generic story with a few trappings from from the Dark Tower series, kind of thrown here and there to remind you that you're watching an adaptation.
Yeah. And they didn't do as bad as the Lawnmower Man adaptation that I always refer to.
God, no.
But
that may be the very worst adaptation of a
right.
story ever.
Right. But there were times I was in there going, wait a minute, what part of the series are they talking about here? Plus, and spoilers here for anybody that's read the series, this, but those that haven't, sorry, but I'm going to spoil it anyway. Jake dies. Yeah. He's dead.
Yeah. And that's very early and important part of the series.
And it makes for Roland's character building through the rest of the series too. And plus, I mean, they get a replacement, Jake, if you will, but it's not the same. That's the point. And like, I kept waiting for him to die in this, thinking that they're going to kill, because it looked like what they're going to do is kill him off that early. And I'm like, Well, no, that didn't happen.
Well, I knew early on that they weren't going to be used, that we weren't going to have Eddie, we weren't going to have Susanna.
Right.
It was just going to be, you know, Roland and Jake.
Yeah.
And I was really, really hoping that we'd see Oi.
Right. But me too. Me too. I was looking for it.
I want my damn Billy Bumbler now.
Right. Exactly. Well, I expected when they went to that carnival, the Pennywise carnival, I was expecting to see something come out of the woods that looked like, and I thought, okay, this is where they're going to introduce it because they've screwed everything else up, you know, time wise. Why not now? No, they didn't even do that. I was like, ah, and I kept expecting things and just, I think that's what it was. I was expecting much.
But that's exactly. There's so much. Okay. When I first heard that it was just going to be the two of them, I was like, fine. There's so much between these two characters. I mean, you know, obviously Roland is the central character, but Jake is definitely the secondary
right.
character.
Right.
And he's the key. And then, I mean, and he gets used by Roland.
Right.
And that's the kind of the whole, one of the major points of the whole narrative.
Right.
But like you said, you didn't see, Jake didn't die, which is, would have been at least something if they'd ended that way.
Yeah.
That would have like, you know, definitely lit people's, taste for a sequel. They're like, oh, we got to see what happens now. Mm-hmm. You know, you're saying, how could Jake die?
Right.
And but that didn't even happen. None of the good stuff that, you know, the Billy Bumbler, the, you know, Jake dying.
Yep.
Think about all the stuff that was going on when Jake was living in New York City about with his teachers and all, you know, all of his personal issues that were going on
right
before he ever got pulled in. And I mean, they just completely cut all that out.
Yeah,
And I don't know, maybe that I guess may be forgivable because it's not really 100% essential to the narrative, but we don't know who Jake is. So how are we going to care about Jake if we
right.
don't really know who Jake is?
Well, and
I think that what a lot of people who are liking it, who have read the books, are projecting what they know about Jake onto the character because they really didn't write much into the character.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the things that kept it alive is the fact that people read the books and they say, "Oh, I know what they meant to do," but you can't really be that forgiving, though. I don't think.
No, you can't use that shorthand.
You can't
expect that everyone out there has read. But I mean, even as someone who read the books and who had adjusted my expectations, I was just sitting there and I was like, give me something that I can recognize from the book, that I can hold on to, that I can say, okay, you're following the path of a beam now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, God, that was. I mean, they didn't even mention the beam,
right?
Did they?
No, not well. I think that. No.
No, they mentioned the tower, but no mention of the beam.
Yeah.
Whatsoever. And
yeah.
I mean, the beam is the thing that links all the different universes. You know, they barely touched on the fact that there are all these different universes that are linked together and never really did much with it. You know,
yeah.
And I mean, that is the whole point. And they didn't introduce any of the references to Stephen King's other stories.
Yeah.
Which, if that's their plan on continuing these movies and not going and not using those references, drop it.
Yeah.
No, just don't even bother because that there's no point if you're not going to use those connections.
Yeah. I mean, they use The Shining. Okay. We got that. That was pretty obvious, almost with a hammer in the face, really, with as much as The Shining. Hey, your shine is whatever. But the rest of them were just little Easter egg drops, like 1408. You know, that's the key to get back. 14. Oh, yeah. I remember that story that was in that audiobook he put out, Smoke and Ashes. And in the great movie with John Cusack, scary. Okay,
they haven't gone to any of these places.
Right.
They're just dropping a reference here.
Yeah, and then Penny, you know? And then Pennywise are a carnival. It's like, wait a minute, no, you got to have the clown there, and you know,
yeah.
He's part of the story. Yeah, and
it just really felt like it was written by someone who either had not read all the stories or didn't care about the stories.
Honestly. Yeah.
And I don't know how many, there were several writers on that, which is a dead giveaway usually for a bad film is
true.
The more writers that you have on the credits, usually the worse film it is, because that means that it's had to be rewritten and it's sucked every time.
Yeah.
And this is the final level of suckage before.
Oh, don't say that. Avengers movie coming out soon has got like several writers on it now.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, that's almost never a good thing. But,
right.
You know, it's not always, because like Blade Runner had four or five writers Hampton Fancher was the main guy, but I mean, I there were like at least three or four other people that did drafts on that movie.
Okay.
And it turned out to be, there was really good stuff. If you watch the documentary about Blade Runner, there's good stuff in there from all the different writers. So that's one of the rare exceptions where a bunch of different writers actually all contribute something equally good to a script, you know?
And when the rarities come in, they come in really good, because like, that right there is like a phenomenal movie. So, but it didn't do it this time. Not at all.
You know, but like I said, I'm hoping that you know, if people like it, I'm like, hey, more power to you. I'm waiting for them to say they're going to do another one. And I mean, the original idea, and I don't know how much they're going to go with this, but I, you know, that Brian Grazer and Ron Howard are still co-producers on the project, and they were the ones that got this whole thing rolling in the first place. And their original plan, as most Dark Tower fans know, because this has been going on for like over a decade now, hasn't it since Ron Howard first said he was going to make this movie.
I believe it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. Yeah, and it's been, you know, on again, off again, on again.
Yeah.
His dream for the project was to do a series of movies. I'm not sure how many exactly he said, like at least three or four, with a television series, which HBO had already unofficially stepped up and said, we'll do the series.
Wow.
To bridge the movies, so that you would have the major events happening in the movies, and then more of the character development stuff, you know, in a TV series, which is freaking brilliant.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great way.
It's the only way that you could really do this story justice.
True.
Because it's all about the characters. You cannot develop these characters in a 2-hour time frame, plus give the audience a bunch of action. And in this case, the character stuff just went all out the window, and it's like, no. And even if they did and they went with the action, it wasn't action that advanced the story. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. And they I think they had a lot of special effects money to spend, and they said, okay, we'll create this for no reason. And I mean, there was, I don't know, it could have been a lot better. But
you know, here's what I would have done differently if I was having trouble getting any studio to commit to doing, you know, making numerous films, which I think is what the problem has been. So this is kind of their pilot. This is their test, their prototype or whatever.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even start with anything in the original, in the major series. I would start with The Wind in the Keyhole.
Oh wow!
Because it's completely self-contained.
Yeah,
you don't have to know anything about what happens to Roland or to Jake or any of those people, even though they are in the narrative.
Right.
But you know, they're on the outer level. There's like the story within the story. But I thought, you know, I was like, okay, if you're going to use an introduction, this would be perfect, because you can introduce the characters without having to tell us who they are, that give us their backgrounds or who they are, or what they're doing, because at the center of it is the story that Roland's telling while they're, you know, the storm's going on outside.
Right.
But that's the way I would have done.
Yeah. You know, good point there. Good point. But like, I agree that this was their pilot, and normally when you get a pilot, that's going to be your best work, and then the rest of them lack them, but they didn't do their best work, I think, in this one. So, but
there are no hooks. They didn't make any attempt to hook you in to make you want to say, okay, I want to see what happens to these people, you know?
Right. And I think to Stephen King fans, I mean, the ones I know, I enjoyed the movie because I enjoyed, like I said, the little Easter eggs here and there, finding those, but they weren't, they were just referenced. They like I said, the 1408, that was a number. It didn't have anything to do with the story that was involved. And so the thing about the books, they have actually something to do with the story. You know, whenever they mention another story, it's got a reason. Here is just like, oh, there's the number. And that one, it kind of bugged me, but it was still kind of fun to find those little things. And I went with a non-Stephen King fan. And every time I'd see one, I'd kind of chuckle. He goes, what'd I miss? And I'd have to explain it to him. And then by the time I was done, it's like I'd missed another one. So
here's what I would say, okay, let's never see another movie if it would be picked up for like Showtime or HBO or any of the premium services.
Yeah.
And if they just gave even 3/4 of the budget that they give to Game of Thrones, I could forgive some cheaper looking CGI or some cut rate budget on the special effects. If they didn't cheat me out of the character stuff, because like I said, that's what drives me in reading these novels, and what makes me love them so much is because I hear these characters talk in my mind and I see them in my mind, and
right.
and the language that they use is just so unique, and they didn't use enough of that in the movie.
Right.
Maybe they were afraid that people wouldn't understand what they were saying because it's not, it's kind of odd English, but
yeah. Whenever I reviewed this on the podcast, earlier podcast, one of the things I made fun of was in the books, he came over and he tried a tuna fish sandwich, but he kept calling it Tudor fish because of his language. Mm-hmm. And I love that. That was the coolest thing. And from then on, I called Tudor fish sandwiches because that's the way to do it. And the cop,
they did use the aspirin gag, didn't they?
Something sprin. Yeah. Yeah. I think, yeah, they did. And, but it was like very briefly, it was like, okay. Oh yeah, that's right. So sprin. Yeah. And then, what was the other one? Oh, the Ka and the Ka-Tet. I mean, that's major. They didn't even mention it.
It's like, that's why I was going to get to when I was talking about the beam. Yeah, there was nothing about the Ka or the Ka-Tet or Ka as a wheel or,
Right.
That's the, they could have done so much more with this movie.
Well,
but maybe they'll get another chance, or maybe, like I said, maybe it will just, the rights will go. I mean, well, that Grazer and Richie Cunningham, they have the show. So that whatever they want to do with it, if HBO wants to step up and take a stab, I hope that they'll say, hey, you did a great job with Game of Thrones, why not?
Right,
Have at it.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, Brett Hartman, the guy that sat in and filled in while you guys were off doing dilly dallying things over the summer, one of the things he pointed out was he goes, maybe this is like Kill Bill. Kill Bill Volume 1, all it is action. Kill Bill Volume 2 is where they explain it. And I'm right. Yeah, maybe, but man, I wish they wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah, and honestly, Kill Bill 2 is not the best example. I much, much prefer Kill Bill 1 to Kill Bill 2.
I know, right? So, they tried. We'll see what happens. I'm just hopeful because I love the series, and I'm a huge Stephen King fan, always will be. So,
yeah.
And and
I love a lot of the stuff that he's written since he started writing the Dark Tower series. Some of the books that are purposely built into it, like Hearts in Atlantis.
Yeah.
Did you read that one?
Yeah.
And the movie's actually not bad, but the movie does goes to great lengths to like separate it.
Yeah, it does.
It barely mentions the Lowmen. Or all of the characters that actually come directly out of the Dark Tower.
Yeah,
but it's a good story, and it was kind of and there are other stories that he's done. Oh, Insomnia.
Insomnia, 100%. Yeah,
yeah. And I would actually like to see a movie of Insomnia.
Oh, me too. That would be creepy.
As long as it'd have to be done very seriously, because I'm thinking of the little guys at the end, the little manipulators, the trans-dimensional whatevers.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously, they're no matter how you do that, it's going to get a laugh, but you've got to play it straight. That's the only thing
right.
that I'd wonder, how are you going to pull this off and make people, not disbelieve it because it's, goofy right. little characters or, because right. obviously they'd have to be CGI.
Yeah. Yeah,
but anyway, I was just bringing that up because it ties in very heavily with the whole Dark Tower thing.
Yeah. Did you? By the way, did you ever catch the series 11/22/63 on Hulu?
Yes, I did. And I liked it. Yes, I would give it out of like 5 stars. I'd probably give it about 3, 3.5, maybe. Ah,
okay.
It kind of disappointed me a little towards the end. These mid series almost always do that. But I can't say that completely discounts everything that came before.
Right.
And honestly, what's his name that stars in it?
James Franco.
I usually can't stand James Franco. He just seems such a smug bastard that I just want to smack him.
But he pulled this one off. So yeah,
he was good. I liked his character and I was interested. He seemed convincing. I liked a lot of the casting in
the one thing that got me on that one is in the book, he actually goes back and forth and kind of like testing along the way, kind of testing the waters. He fixes something, comes back and see how it is, and then goes back and has to start over again. And I can understand why they didn't do that, because that would make for like a really long series. But there were times when I'm like, oh man, he needed to go back and make sure that that worked, or, you know, that needed to be checked, or, you know, those little things. But yeah, but they tied it all in at the end, and it's like, okay, you brought it, you neatly gift wrapped it for us. So I accepted it. And but that was, I don't know, that was one of the ones that, that's the way they should have done Dark Tower, is a series like that, several seasons even.
And that's one I haven't read, but I've got the audiobook, so I'm planning on throwing it on. Actually, the next Stephen King book that I'm going to, well, it's going to be an audiobook because I never have time to read anymore, is going to be Dr. Death. Did you like that one?
I have not read that yet.
The sequel to The Shining? You haven't read it yet?
No, I have not.
Well, I haven't either, so I guess one of my...
Yeah, really? See? Well, see, here's my thinking. Is like, I didn't think The Shining needed a sequel.
I don't think it needs a sequel either, but like, honestly, it doesn't sound like it's going to relate very, very heavily back on, it's not going to rely heavily on The Shining, not from my understanding of the description. It's, you know, it's really Danny's story. He's still got the whole thing with him and The Shining, but it's driven him into, you know, an alcoholic stupor. And I think I did start listening to it, now I think about it. Oh, no. I remember I was listening to a Stephen King audiobook. I can't remember which one, but it's like a promo. They let you get the first chapter of Dr. Death, and that's where I got that from. But I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. So I just haven't gotten around to listening to it, but I've got a lot of stuff off my list now, so I might have to throw that on pretty soon.
That is absolutely the only Stephen King book I have not read, only because I'm like, oh man, I don't know. But oh well. All right, well, let's move on to another topic here. You're a Game of Thrones fan, and I've had Bret Hartman on here. He's talked about Game of Thrones. He's a huge fan. I'm lost out on season two. I kind of got bored. Too many names to keep up with. I don't know. It's just, I just lost interest. And this season has got people just like railing. This is the most talked about season of Game of Thrones I've ever heard. What are you thinking about this season? How's it going over with you?
It's the best season since like the first one, since first maybe one, two, or third season. After that, it kind of went up and down in places, but it never really hit its original quality, in my opinion. It'd have moments of brilliance and then have moments of, you know, like just sheer stupidity. Most of that was, you know, due to the changes that they made to the books.
Right.
And I should say that, you know, I watched the first six seasons, I guess, of Game of Thrones before ever even, or at least five seasons before even starting to read the series, because I wanted to be able to enjoy the series for what it was. And I know that once I read the book, is what we were just talking about with Stephen King.
Right.
Once you've read the book, you're going to be disappointed in the series. And I, of course, am very active on Facebook and all the social media. And I'm in at least a couple of different Game of Thrones Facebook groups. And, you know, I'd hear people complaining constantly. I mean, it's become like a trope, is that, you know, the fans of the book complain about the series. I mean, it's just like they've had memes out the wing wing about it. But the group that I'm in is specifically for A Song of the Ice and Fire. So it's really, but they make it very clear that they also embrace the series, but they have been around since before there was a series. So that's why I joined this particular group.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So there's a lot of people in there that, you know, are, you know, saying, the series really effed this up and messed that up. And I was like, I understood where they were coming from, but I didn't understand exactly because I hadn't read the books. And now that I have, and I've gotten caught up, I see a lot of what they were saying. And the changes that they made from the books were really ill-advised for the most part. And they've killed off characters in the series that are still very alive and very much part of the main plot in the books. This is a spoiler for people who haven't read the books, I guess, but it's not a spoiler for the series at all, because it's happened two or three seasons ago. Stannis Baratheon, who is Robert Baratheon's brother, who was the king at the beginning when we stood in the very first season. Okay. Stannis, you know, his design is on the throne because his brother sat on it, even though his brother was a usurper, but that doesn't stop him anyway.
Right.
He's a really weird kind of dour personality in the books. And he is in the series too, but he's very one dimensional in the series. In the books, he has this just, I don't know if he actually has this sense of humor about himself and just, you know, refuses to let on that he's joking. But he's just one of these really weird kind of characters. Sorry, excuse me.
Very eccentric. Up
about it. Yeah. Yeah. He was killed off a couple of seasons ago in the series, in the TV series.
Right.
And he's still alive and still very active in what's going on. I mean, he's definitely not going to be sitting on the Iron Throne. I don't think anyone believes that, but he still has some influence and he's still a player. But he's not the only one that they've done that to. I mean, like character of the Blackfish, who was Catelyn Stark's, not brother, I think he's an uncle, but he's like this extraordinary warrior and no one has ever defeated him in battle. And in the TV series, they killed him off screen, supposedly. And in the books, they made a big deal out of the fact that he got away from him.
Oh.
But those are just a couple of examples. There's just dozens and dozens of examples. But this season almost makes up for it. This season, they are off book because there are no more books to base him on because George Martin spent too much time messing around playing on the set with Game of Thrones during the filming instead of writing his books like he should have been. There are people that would be taking great umbrage that I said that in the group that I'm in, but I'm like, no, it's the truth. He shouldn't have been messing around on the series. He should have been writing these books because now he's behind and the people are in the series. They're basically writing their own path. And we have no idea what it is that George R. R. Martin really envisions for these characters and what's going to happen.
Right.
But this season, because it is the penultimate season, next season is it. Also, the already too short seasons of 10 episodes per season starting this year have been axed down to 7 episodes.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this season was over in the bat of an eyelash.
Wow.
And next season is going to be the same way, although I think I have heard that the episodes are going to be longer. So instead of being 1 hour, they might be anywhere from 1 hour and 15 minutes to 1.5 hours. I don't think that we'll get 2 hours, although that'd be, you know, wonderful.
That'd be cool for fans.
Yeah, but that, you know, who knows? It's the last it's the last season for Game of Thrones. So maybe HBO might pull out the stops and throw on the budget to be able to stretch it out that far. I'd love to see it.
So what is it about this season, other than being off book? What is it that makes this season so much so special?
Dragons. Mother freaking dragons.
That's what I hear. Yes.
The dragons are out, bitch, man. They are out and they are pissed off and they are like roasting the countryside.
Nice.
So that's the big part of it. I mean, we spent so many seasons with Daenerys and, you know, across the narrow sea as she slowly built up her army and freed slaves. And then she got pulled into this, you know, political thing where she couldn't leave because things would be a disastrous if she left and blah, 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 blah. So that by the end of it, people are just like, enough already. Do you want the Iron Throne or do you want to sit around and play, you know, and play, what is the word I'm looking for? Play savior to all of these slaves. You know, decide what it is you want to do and do it. But, you know, I realized that they were trying to keep her busy over there while they were developing other plots, you know, on the other side of the Narrow Sea in Westeros. Mm-hmm. But now this season, boom, at the beginning of the season, she's here. She's finally here with all her armies of the Dothraki, the horsemen that are like, you know, these amazing horse warriors
who've
never crossed the Narrow Sea because they believe the sea because it's salt water and the horses can't drink it. So they believe it's cursed and that it's poison.
Right.
So they've never, ever crossed the Narrow Sea. But, you know, Daenerys talked him into it because she's, you know, she is the mother of dragons after all. And so she's starting her move now. She's taking over territory. She's, you know, demanding that her, you know, her, the bannermen that used to, you know, support her family, that they stay, you know, that they stay true to their oaths, and she's not afraid to roast people in dragon fire if they defy her. and that's another interesting part of the show, is that she's definitely, I don't see anyone else sitting on the Iron Throne other than Daenerys. I know I've, you know, and people have all kinds of opinions on that, but I really just don't see anyone but Daenerys getting on the Iron Throne, unless they kill her off for some strange reason, which is going to be just, I don't even want to think about that, because it would just be a terrible mistake to do that. She's been the central character for so long now. To kill her off at this point is just, it's, I mean, you can kill off Ned Stark, you know, at the end of the first book, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you can't kill off a character like, you know, at the, in the very final stages, like Daenerys.
Right.
It just wouldn't fly, and people would, you would totally lose your audience. You would lose me. I couldn't see any circumstance where it would be acceptable to kill her character off at this point.
But you never know.
The other thing is that they're saying that, you know, there's a prophecy and all these other things, and because of his lineage, John is actually the one who is the rightful heir to the throne,
right?
Because he's a male, but she is actually his, as we found out this season, which we readers of the books pretty much already knew because they'd given so many hints,
right?
But Daenerys is John Snow's aunt.
Yeah, yeah. And someone told me that, and I'm like,
season,
oh,
he
cool.
banged his aunt.
Yeah.
At
yeah,
the end of
yeah.
the season, you see him or busy, and which is just fine because the Targaryens, they intermarry. That's what they always did.
Well,
and that's why they all have like this, you know, silver hair, and in the books they have purple eyes. But anyway, they didn't do it for the TV series.
Yeah.
So there's a lot that's happened in a very short amount of episodes, and so that's why everyone's just so excited, because by the time you've caught your breath at the end of one episode and you've gone online and just talked about every single episode, there's another one coming right behind it with just as much great stuff in it. And, you know, maybe Game of Thrones took our word to heart to Netflix about their Marvel series, because maybe seven episodes. I mean, cause there was, definitely in some of the last past seasons in those 10 episodes, there's been some filler.
Right.
And
oh yeah.
There's been times that, it's like, okay, you're really dragging this on. Let's get on with the story. So, well, you know, maybe down to seven, you know, cutting things down to seven episodes is what they needed, because every episode of those seven was worth watching this season.
That's what I kept hearing. Like I said, Brett at work would always say, man, you need to get back on here. I got to talk to you about this. I'm like, I don't know. Like I said,
there's so many interesting characters in there that, you know, who come from different paths. I mean, you know, the one most loathsome family in the whole series is the Lannisters.
Right. But the
imp, who is, you know, a Lannister, is the hand of Daenerys. He is her advisor, and she couldn't hope for a better advisor, because the guy is like wise beyond any other character that is in the series. I mean, he reads constantly because he's a dwarf.
Right.
And because he's hated by his family and always has been. And that's what drove him away. He finally put, because his father totally screwed him over and was going to have him killed.
Right.
And meanwhile, sleeping with his woman. And he found that out and he killed his own father. So he was, you know, basically alienated from his own family at that point. And now he's having to negotiate with his own family on behalf of Daenerys to basically get the throne. Although right now they've got the White Walkers to deal with.
Yeah.
So that's how this season has ended, is that they finally maybe kind of have a truce going so that they can send everyone north to fight the White Walkers. But of course, Cersei Lannister is a deceiving biatch and can't be trusted. So she's trying to pull out, but Jaime's there, and Jaime actually has learned to be a halfway decent human being, even though he's still in love with his sister.
Right.
And she's a complete biatch, obviously. So he's arguing with her. I think he's going to leave and take at least as many men with him as he can take, as he can get to follow him, because he's a man of honor now, you know. And he's an interesting character that you started off absolutely hating.
So I heard something. Are they going to turn a dragon
They already did.
Did they? Okay. I heard something about that. I wasn't sure if they were, if it's like end or what. Okay.
Mommy Dragon only has two kids now.
Oh, man.
Her third one. Yeah, her third one. And it was so like, not even with they brought this dragon down with like almost no effort.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
No one can bring down a stinking dragon.
Right.
There's all these people that have tried and tried and failed. These guys, these dead guys, the Night King, they call him, and his army of the dead, they picked up this basically ice spear and just like, and a dragon in flight, like, you know, a mile in the air, and threw this thing.
Jeez.
And it pierces the chest of this dragon and brings it straight down into the icy waters. And of course, everyone, you know, is knowing what's going to happen.
Right.
Anything that's dead, animals included, come back at the touch of the Night King.
Right.
And sure enough, they brought him back. And at the end of this is a spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen the last episode yet of the Game of Thrones, but they bring the dragon back to life. And there was some discussion about, I thought that, I was like, he's not going to breathe fire because it's this a song of ice and fire, right? So it's ice versus fire.
Right.
So it wouldn't make sense if ice was using fire in a fire-breathing dragon. It has to be an ice-breathing dragon. Well, I guess it's somewhere in the middle because it breathes fire, but it's blue fire.
Oh, okay.
I think that's kind of key, honestly. But that's how they bring down the wall is with this dragon. So as soon as people saw the dragon go down, they were putting two and two together and like, aha. Now we know how the dead are going to get through the wall, or that is because they've got a dragon now.
Yeah. Yep.
And the fact that they brought him down so easily, it's like, okay, how are they going to use dragons against these guys that they can turn them so easily and turn them against the living? So it's all kinds of great questions are being asked now, and how they're going to resolve this, and who's going to sit on the Iron Throne. But it's not going to be John, okay? And I'm sorry, I love John. John's a great. Some people hate John because he's such a kind of a sap. Yeah, and he is a sap. But he's Sir Lancelot, basically. You know,
okay.
he does the right thing every single time. But let's be serious. Let's think about this. Is being 100% honest 100% of the time, is that make an ideal king? No.
Well,
hell no. That's going to be the worst king in the world. A king that can't play poker is not a good king at all.
Yeah.
So he is good at what he does, which is leading troops. And I think that he is going to, I think, you know, he'll probably marry Daenerys.
Okay.
And he'll be like her commander in arms or something like that. But I believe it is Daenerys that sits the throne. And there's some people that I don't know where they're getting this at. Some people actually think that Tyrion, the imp, is going to sit the throne. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Exactly. Where? What indication do you see in this entire story that he has any desire to sit on the throne? He doesn't. He said so many times, and there's no way that it's just ridiculous to think of him sitting on the Iron Throne. I'm sorry. That's not who he is. That's not his character. His character is one who advises, because you hear, you know, most people who don't know him don't take him seriously because he's an imp, because he's a dwarf, you know?
Right.
The people who know him know he's a wise person, and that's why he's the hand to Daenerys, the queen, or the queen prospect, or whatever you want to call her at this point.
All right, so she'll sit the throne, dragons will win, everything's going to be good, and we still, how long until the next season starts? Next year?
God, way too long. Actually, I think it's even more than a year. I think they're delaying the next season, I heard.
Oh, wow.
I got to read up on that because I don't know. That may have been just a rumor or something. But, yeah, I did hear there's going to be even more than a year wait before we get the final season. And I'm just like, that's being a complete bastard, really.
Well, give me time to catch up on your other things.
That's just a nasty, nasty thing to do, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's call an end to this podcast. But before we do, let me give you a little heads up. And, Eric, you'll be interested in this. Coming up soon, in fact, not this weekend, but the following weekend, I will be attending the Horror Hound Convention. Eric, you and I went there a couple of years ago together. Where we got
that one in Indy or Ohio?
In Indy. And that's the one where you and I got to meet Cheryl Lee. And
it was.
And
that was the highlight of that weekend.
Yep. And let's see, you also got to meet Michael Beck, James Remar,
Michael Berryman.
Oh, Michael Berryman was the greatest.
Was he?
Yeah, he was so cool. I mean, so friendly too. And then Bill Moseley,
the guy from Bill Moseley,
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Land of Thousand Corpses. But anyway, I'm going again this year. They're having a reunion with the Goonies cast.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, Sean Astin and Corey Feldman, and forgive me, the Japanese kid. They're going to be there.
Can you pay to have your picture taken with what's his name doing the Truffle Shuffle?
Oh, he's not going to be there. but that would have been cool.
No Truffle Shuffle.
Yeah, it's like three, maybe four cast members, but that's like their big draw. And then they also have Friday the 13th Part 2 reunion with like several members there, including the guy that played the Jason with the burlap mask. But here's what's getting me. You may know him from Bates Motel series. He's the sheriff or the police officer.
Yes. Yeah, he was on Lost, too.
Yeah. I know him best as Batmanuel from the Tick series, the original Tick series with Patrick Warburton. He was Batmanuel. Or you mean Batman? No, Batmanuel. So, but I am gonna annoy him and whatever it's gonna take. But we're gonna relive his Batmanuel.
Well, that sounds like fun.
So somehow, some way, I'm gonna annoy him enough to get a Batmanuel.
I would love to go to a convention, but my leg would not. Yeah. I'd have to be like in one of those Walmart carts and running people over because I couldn't walk more than
an
hour before
I pain. I should get you to come up here for this one because then we could butt to the head of the line.
There you go.
So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. It's going to be interesting, and that's coming up in a couple of weeks. Isaac and I are going to attend it, of course. And you remember Bernie? He's going to be there.
Yeah.
So he
doesn't miss those things.
Yeah, he loves the Horror Hound and Days of the Dead too. He goes to that one too. The two horror conventions they have there. So I'll be going there. Hopefully you'll be getting some interviews. Last couple of cons I've gone to, I just didn't bother because I just wanted to be a patron,
Yeah. Well, that's why I've never, that's one of the reasons I never cosplay. Number one reason I don't cosplay is because I would suck. I have no skills at costumes or makeup at all. So, but the number two thing is I feel sorry for those people. I mean, I'm glad they're there because that's one of my biggest draws to go to these things is I love watching the cosplayers.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, it would so suck to have to deal with those costume malfunctions all day long and making sure that everything's, and I mean, and I'm sure that they do like posing for pictures, but I mean, that's all they're doing. They're dealing with their costume and they're posing for pictures all day long. They can't really enjoy the con,
Exactly. And same thing when I go to interview, it's like I mean, Isaac gets so frustrated with me. He goes, "Can't we go to this thing?" And I'm like, "No, I got to get this interview." And last time around, there was a cosplayer. He's been doing this JoJo's Bizarre Adventure cosplay lately. And it's a Japanese animation that he just has fallen in love with. All the characters are based on classic rock songs or artists or whatever. But anyway, it's really cool. But anyway, he saw one of the – one of the characters that he was cosplaying as one of them. He saw another one. And he goes, "I want to get my picture taken." And I got to interview Roy Thomas, one of the creators of Marvel Comics from back in the 70s. I got to talk to this guy first. Yeah. And it's like, you tell me what our priorities are. So he didn't care about the Roy Thomas. But this time I think there will be a few interviews I want to try to get. But for the most part, I've been enjoying being just a patron and enjoying the cons. So.
Yeah, well, once I get healed up here, I'll be definitely at least trying to hit one or two next summer.
All right, well, I'll keep you in mind whenever they get around. Maybe we can go together.
Well,
again.
I really want to go to a major con this year or next year, maybe maybe Chicago. I mean, eventually, I'd love to go out to San Diego just once, even though I know it would be a freaking nightmare because I mean I've seen footage. It's just an ocean of people, and I usually hate crowds like that. But just for once, just before I die, say I went to the Comic-Con, I'm sure that at least you'd be able to see a few things after standing in hours of lines. But
well, one of the things maybe we can get together because C2E2 is a really big con up there in Chicago.
Yeah, that's the one that that Tim always goes to, I think.
Yeah, maybe we can team up and get him to go. All of us go to get that one. And
yeah,
get him to go.
I guarantee he's probably already planning on going. I don't think he's missed a year in a long time.
So maybe that'll be the one we all team up again. So
And I mean, I got a brand new car now, and I'm dying to take a road trip anyway.
Ah, there we go. All right, well, there we go. Planning is in the first stage. We got the idea. Yep. So, all right, well, let's close out this podcast. Before we go any further, let's talk about some of the merchandise. Buy our T-shirts. Eric, I got myself a Nerd Up T-shirt. People love it.
I need to get one.
You know how we always joked about it would make you look good and people ask you about it? They do. I was wearing it, and people were like, Nerd Up Podcast, what's that? I'm like, that's my podcast. And then they'd point out, oh, who's this? Who's this on the shirt, you know? So I'd talk about all of us, and I was like, wow, these things do attract attention. So cool, if you like that. If not, otherwise, just show your support. Buy one. Go to the nerduppodcast.com website and click on the link. Go buy yourself a Nerd Up Podcast T-shirt. They're awesome. Artwork by Tim Coker. Speaking of the artwork by Tim Coker, I got a puppet of myself made from the artwork that Tim Coker made by a group called Ruppets. Holy cow, this thing's cool. I don't have to do anything anymore, Eric. I just go break out the puppet, and it does all the work for me. Jim Henson's got nothing.
Like, is it like the Baba Booey puppet?
Actually, yeah. Similar, yeah. So, but anyway, I like Tim's artwork so much I had to get something done with it. So, but anyway, that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
I'm Eric Billingsley. You can reach me at Eric Bill.
And, of course, both those Twitter, of course. As we say at the end of each and every episode, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.